Today we discuss two problems which are of relevance for Monte Carlo simulations and that are a good exercise to understand the role of bias in these numerical methods. So the first example we discuss is the computation of a function of an average value. So suppose that you define a function j of x, which may be any function of x, and suppose you want to compute the function j, in the point in which x is equal to the average value of a function f with respect to pi. So a very simple example, imagine that j of x is simply the cube. So we want to compute the average value of f with respect to pi to the power 3. Of course, this is trivial. You know what is the correct estimator. If you want to compute the average value of f pi to the power 3, of course you take the sample mean and you take the cube of it. So you take f bar cube. So there is nothing very difficult here in the definition of the estimator. If you have a generic function j of x, of course the estimator is j of f bar. But what we want to discuss is the bias on this estimate and the error. What is the error on our result? So let's begin with the bias. So the bias is, again, we should take our function j of f bar and compute the average with respect to many repetitions of the Monte Carlo simulations. So we do one simulation and you obtain f bar 1. So you compute j of f bar 1. F bar 1 is the sample mean for the first simulation. Then you perform a second simulation and you obtain f bar 2, which is the sample mean in the second simulation, and you compute j of f bar 2. The average with respect to the Monte Carlo repetitions is nothing but 1 divided by the number of Monte Carlo repetitions of all the results that we have obtained, so of all the j of f bar I. F bar I is the sample mean in the ith numerical simulation. So we have several numerical simulations from 1 to nmc, and we average all results. We want to compute by definition, this quantity in the limit in which the number of repetitions goes to infinity. For generic functions j, there is no way to obtain an exact formula for this quantity, except in a very few cases. So here we report two cases. First case, suppose that we want to compute f, the average value of f squared. So the estimator is f bar squared. So we want to compute the average value of respect to the Monte Carlo repetition of f bar square, and this is something that we have already computed. The result is written here. The average is, of course, to leading order the quantity that we want to compute, so is the average value square respect to pi of f, but then there is a correction of order 1 over n, which is nothing but the variance of f. So we see that there is a bias. So if we take this definition to compute the square of the average value of f with respect to pi, we get a bias of order 1 over n. And the bias is nothing but 1 over n times the variance of f. One can compute exactly in the same way the bias if we want to compute the cubic power of the average value of f. So if we take j of x equal x cube, the calculation is left as an exercise, something that you can really easily do if you have understood the calculation of the average value of f bar square, so the computation of the variance, and it's done exactly in the same way. One should distinguish the cases in which the three indices, in the next page there is a hint, you write f bar square, f bar cube, as f bar times f bar and f times f bar. You substitute the definition of f bar and you get a summation with three indices, I, j, k, and that you should distinguish the case in which the three indices are all different, the case in which two indices are equal and one is different, and the case in which the three indices are all equal. And then you do exactly the same calculation we did for the for f bar square. The final result is at the end of page one, and you see that for large n, for n going to infinity, of course, the average value of f bar cube converges to the average value of f respect to pi cube. But then there is a bias, and the bias contains two terms, one of order 1 over n and one of order 1 over n square. The leading term is again of order 1 over n, and this is consistent with the idea that the bias is always of order 1 over n. Now we want to discuss the same calculation in the general case for a generic function j. For a generic function j, we are not able to do the calculation for generic values of n, and we only do it for very large values of n. So n is finite, but large. So we want to get the leading term, so the 1 over n term, which is relevant for the bias. And of course, we'll disregard quantities that decay as 1 over n square, 1 over n cube, and so on. So what is the idea? The idea is the following. We take f bar, the sample mean, and we rewrite as the average value of f respect to pi plus f bar minus the average value. If n is large, the sample mean is a very good approximation of the average value of f respect to pi. So that difference, f bar minus average value, is small. And so we perform a Taylor expansion. This is the idea. Take n large and assume that f bar is close to the average value of f respect to pi, so that we can Taylor expand the result. So we do the expansion. Here I've written the expansion to third order, and of course there will be other terms present, which are not written here. And then we compute the average all the average values. The important point is that the second term, which is the average value of f bar minus the average of f respect to pi, is zero. Because remember, f bar is an unbiased estimate. So the average value of f bar respect to the Monte Carlo repetitions is exactly equal with no corrections to the average value of f respect to pi. So the second term vanishes. The third and the fourth term, so the term number 3 and number 4, we have already computed. Essentially, the term of number 3 is the variance multiplied by 1 over n. And the cubic term, we have all ingredients now, because f bar cube we already computed, or at least you should have already computed, but at least you can use the formula which is in the notes. F bar square is something that we computed. So we plug in all the terms in the third line at page 3. I copied the expression for f bar cube, average with respect to the Monte Carlo iterations. Then the next term in square bracket is the average value of f bar square. And then the last two terms, 3 minus 1, in the second line, they are summed, and they just get the last term, which is 2 times the average value of f to the power 3. You collect all terms, and you will easily realize that the terms of order 1 over n cancel, and you remain with one term of order 1 over n square. So if we disregard terms of order 1 over n square, we get the final expression, which is written there, which tells you that the average value of j of f bar with respect to the Monte Carlo repetitions is the result that you want. So is j computed at the average value of f with respect to pi plus the bias. And the bias is the term 1 over 2 n j second multiplied by the variance with respect of pi of the function f. So again, we see that there is a bias and it is of order 1 over n. So there is essentially only one variable, one function, one quantity which is unbiased, which is the sample mean. Any function of the sample mean is a biased quantity. And the bias, of course, is written here, is of order 1 over n. The second quantity that we want to compute is the error. So the error, again, is the average over the Monte Carlo repetitions of the variance of JF bar. We do exactly the same calculation as before, expanding the argument of JF bar in Taylor expansion. There are several terms, so we first compute JF bar minus the average value, and as you can see there are several terms. I've written some terms here, so we are left with three terms after the cancellation of the leading one. One term which is J prime of computed at the average value multiplied by F bar minus the average value of F with respect to pi. Then one term which is proportional to the second derivative of J. And then there is one term which is instead coming from the average value of JF bar, which is of order 1 over n. We squared everything, and we get all the terms which are written here. Now we want to see the order of each term. So the first term, which is J1 squared, we are at page 4, J1 squared minus the variance of F bar. And this is something that we know. This is of order 1 over n. It's nothing but 1 over n, the variance with respect to pi of f. This is something that we already computed. Is the error on f bar. Then we have a second term which contains the fourth power of the difference between f bar and the average value. We didn't compute it, but you may check exactly as f bar minus the average value of f to the power 3. This is an even higher power. This is power 4. This power is again of order 1 over n squared. This is of order 1 over n squared. So it's negligible compared to the first term, which is of order 1 over n. Then we have one term which is explicitly of order 1 over n squared. Then we have the term which is cubic, and we have already computed it, and we know it is of order 1 over n squared. Then we have a term which is of order 1 over n, but the average value is 0, the average value of f bar minus the average value of f with respect to pi is 0. Then there is another term which has a 1 over n in front, and then there is the variance with respect to the Monte Carlo repetitions, and the variance is again of order 1 over n. So it's of order 1 over n times 1 over n is of order 1 over n squared. So all terms cancel, and we end up with a very simple formula. Only the first term remains at order 1 over n. So the result is that the error sigma squared is j1 squared, j1 is the first derivative, times 1 over n, the variance with respect to pi of the function f. So we get what is called the error propagation formula. The error propagation formula essentially tells you that the error on JF bar is the derivative of J computed in the average value multiplied the error on F bar. Of course, in a practical calculation, we replace the average value of F of pi in the argument of the derivative with the sample mean. And the error of F bar, we use the expressions that we have obtained before. One important point is that when you take the square root, remember to put an absolute value in front of the derivative. Of course, the error is a positive quantity, and so we want to take the absolute value in the derivative of j with respect to x. So here we have in this way derived the what is called the error propagation formula, which is a general formula to compute the error, but of course has the limitation that it's only valid if n is sufficiently large. So to do a better calculation of the error when n is not large, we have to use other methods, and we'll discuss in the next lesson, next Thursday. The jackknife method is the appropriate method that should be used when n is not large. Now let's say a few words on the meaning of bias. If you confuse the average value, the mean value, with the median, the bias essentially means that we have a high probability to find the f bar to find our result larger than the mean value, then lower the mean value, or vice versa. Let's do an extreme example just to understand what I mean. Suppose that we have a function f such that the average value of f is zero. And suppose that for some reason we want to compute the square of f, of the average value of f. Of course, the average value is zero. If the average value is zero, the average value of the square is again zero. But now we don't know the result, and we use a numerical method. So we use a numerical method to estimate the average value of f, and then, of course, the idea is just we square the results to obtain the average value of f squared. F bar is an unbiased estimator, so the result that we get will be centered around the mean value. The mean value here is zero, so f bar will be obtained, we have a distribution which is centered around zero, around the mean value. And negative and positive values of f bar will be obtained with equal probability because f bar is an unbiased estimator. But now let's compute the probability of the values of f bar squared. The point is here that, of course, f bar squared is always positive. The probability of obtaining f bar squared negative is always zero because, of course, the square is always a positive number. So the probability distribution of f bar squared will have this funny shape, essentially diverging for small f bar. In an integrable way, of course, it diverges, but it's integrable because it's a probability. So the integral should be 1. There is no, I mean, this should always be satisfied. But this is the shape of pf bar. But whatever is the shape of pf bar, the result tells you that any estimate that you get of f bar squared will always be positive. So we will be always getting results which will be larger than the correct one. So this explains you in which sense this estimate is a biased estimate. It's a biased estimate because it's always on one side of the correct value in this case. You will never get anything negative. You will always get estimates which are larger than the correct result. This explains you that this is a biased estimate. Of course, if the number of measurements increases, the distributions becomes thinner, and your typical values that obtain of f bar will be smaller, always positive, but smaller. And in the limit in which n goes to infinity, of course, all results will converge to zero. But convergence is only from above, not from below. This is the sense of bias. The other important point that one should be aware is that bias is typically irrelevant when the number of iterations is large. Look at the pictures here. I depicted the function pf bar, and there are two lines. One is the average value of this distribution, which is, well, here I draw a distribution which is not exactly symmetric, but it's close to the maximum, say it's not very relevant, but close to the maximum. And there is a small bias, which means that j computed in the average value of f with respect to pi is slightly different from the average value of this distribution. But it's clear that the small error that you make due to the bias is irrelevant once you have the error. You get results which fluctuate in this distribution, and of course the fact that there is this tiny difference is in practice irrelevant. And moreover, the other point which should be noticed, that the bias decreases as 1 over n, while the error decreases 1 over square root of n. So imagine that this is the picture for n equal 1000. Then if I draw the picture, for instance, in this case, the bias, suppose that here in this case, the bias is 1/3 of the error. If I increase the number of iterations by a factor of 100, the bias decreases by 100, but the error only by a factor of 10. So if previously the difference was 1/3, the bias was 1/3 of the error, if we increase the statistics by a factor of 100, the bias becomes a factor of 1 divided by 30. So it's 10 times smaller because of this difference behavior. So effectively, when n is large, the difference which between the two average values is tiny compared to the width of the distribution, and is in practice irrelevant. Of course, the bias is relevant if n is small. For instance, imagine that you are in the case which is drawn in the bottom of the page. In that case, you should take into account the bias, because typically you get results which are not correct. They are far too high. And so you need to introduce a bias correction to get something meaningful. And we will learn how to introduce a bias correction with the jackknife method in the next lecture.